Welcome to the Fuller Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 4th of March, recording at 9:18 p.m. Greenwich Mean Time. Now, this being Friday, this is the big picture, long-term outlook for the various different asset classes. But first, a quickie summary. Global stock markets, warning signs abound, but liquidity still rules. The uptrends are being reconfirmed. Japan is starting to look very exciting indeed. In government bonds, an upward dynamic in here today. That resulted when the unemployment figures were higher for the US than generally expected. So this has checked the bond market slide for the time being. In currencies, now this really was interesting. We had a good downward dynamic by the US dollar here today against pretty well all currencies, and it really retraced about 3 or 4 days of a modest rally by the US dollar index, and that suggests to me that the dollar is more likely than not to go back down and have another look at that psychological and prior support near 80 on its dollar index level. And not surprisingly, against that background, we got a real rebound in the precious metals, and also the industrial metals were mostly firm once again. Oil still worryingly high, although apparently not that many people are worrying about it. And natural gas looks like it's consolidating prior to another move on the upside. Okay, big picture, long-term outlook. You know my view that Wall Street is in a secular bear market, long defined here as a generational long process of PE ratio contraction and rising yields. And that is because investors are going to slowly discover, despite some of the outrageous hyperbole, I posted an item on the website today sent to me by a subscriber that'll illustrate that preposterous hyperbole, in my view, an advertorial. Investors will find that they are not back in the 1990s, and therefore they will become more conservative, meaning that they will pay up less for equities and they will demand higher yields, and a very good thing too. Now, Japan, though, saw its bubble burst some 10 years and 3 months before that of Wall Street. So Japan has already gone through that long period of valuation contraction, and Japanese investors are pretty well out of the market, and they've stayed out of the market. They've actually been selling, although heaven knows they must not have all that much left to sell. But I'm talking about Japanese private investors have been selling, not only as the market rallied off its bear market lows back in early 2003, but also during this lengthy base formation extension phase that the Nikkei Topics Index have been seeing. And Japanese institutions, from what I read, and some of my subscribers out there will know more about this than I, but apparently are certainly not heavily invested in the stock market, whereas most of the money, well, sitting in those ridiculous JGBs, which have a Mickey Mouse yield. Now, what's going to change? Well, when the Japanese stock market, well, I'll take the Nikkei 225. Now, that's the one that people still look at. It's sort of the equivalent it's Japan's equivalent of the US's Dow Jones Industrial Average. And my behavioral hunch is that once investors see that not only break clear of the 12,000 area but hold that move, that it won't be all that long thereafter before they start to come back into the market. And it's going to be pretty well one-way traffic, say the market's already sold out. So I wouldn't be at all surprised to see the Nikkei move up to, oh, say 15,000 to throw a number out, and remember the breakout of the base occurs on a move a little above 12,000. So I wouldn't be surprised to see it move up another 3,000 points, really in a matter of a few months. And I think that Japan is the one market I've said all along, I've said it's my favorite developed country stock market for the long term. It doesn't mean it'll do best in a given time period when other markets are doing quite well, largely because it hadn't completed its big base formation extension phase, and that's usually a time-consuming process. But I'm going to continue to play my longs in the Japanese stock market. I have there mostly on the investment side. I have a reduced long in the Nikkei stock average, and I may well add to that on the first or on the next dip that I see. Okay. The big themes, the two big themes that I have, investment themes, and I've been really beating the drum for both of these since early 2003, maybe a little earlier for the metals one, the supply and elasticity one, I really should say. So here are the two themes. Supply inelasticity, that mostly means industrial commodities, including energy and also precious metals. These are collector's items here. There's a global scramble, as you know, for energy, everything from crude oil to uranium. And there is a global scramble for metals. And after years and years and years of neglect in terms of developing new production facilities, particularly in the case of the metals, because prices were low. So it's hardly surprising. Suddenly the demand has changed way beyond anyone's expectations, except for people who'd lived through some of these previous big cycles. And we're talking about starting in 1970. So the industry basically was extremely conservative, run by accountants, and you know what that's going to mean. So they have been very prudent to the point of fault. Now that's starting to change, and they are stepping up production because they're making so much money. Companies like Billiton and Rio Tinto and Western Mining are spending billions in developing production facilities, and governments are in on the act, and so on. But the demand is still really quite strong. And the backwardations show that, in terms of refined metal at any rate, that really there isn't enough of the stuff around. So this is one of my two major secular bull market themes. The other one is emerging markets. And that's because we're going to have slow growth in Europe, in developed Europe. Eastern Europe, I think, will do extremely well. Probably make developed Europe more competitive in the long run, and that's no bad thing. The supply and elasticity theme is very bullish for a number of emerging markets, those in Central and South America, some of the Asian ones that are commodity producers. So that's a very attractive theme. And then there are the rising superpowers, China and India. And really, India is my favorite of those two because I want a democracy and respect for rule of law, property rights when I commit pension fund monies to a stock market. And that's the dilemma, really, with a market such as Russia. The best valuations on offer, as far as resource stocks are concerned, exist in Russia. But there's also the risk, as you know. It's probably a risk worth taking, but just don't overload it. Treat it as more of an investment option. In other words, it might expire with you not doing all that well out of it. So, and you. Point's obvious, I think. Don't bet the ranch on Russia because of the political situation. Okay. Now, Wall Street's bull two-year bull run that we've seen here, what I've described in the past often as a technical bull within a secular bear market. And I feel that, as you know, that we're very close to the end. I've cited all the factors on numerous occasions, not least being the M&A activity, the rising interest rates that we've seen, the booming resources move. These are late in the cycle developments. But I've also emphasized that the last part of a bull run is often the most lucrative. And that's when you're still getting people jumping in who feel that they got, that they've missed the boat or that they got out too soon. And people are emboldened because it actually endures. You get some acceleration and it all ends in tears. And that's what I think is going to happen, but it didn't end in tears this week, and it's going to carry on into next week, I think, almost certainly, and hopefully beyond. I'm just going to continue to monitor it, but remember, monitor it very, very closely. I'm a self-confessed nervous Nelly at this stage of the cycle, because I don't want to give up a whole lot of profits. And when it's easy to make money, and the way some of these markets have been moving, and look at the charts I put up, a lot of them reconfirmed after consolidations, reconfirmed the overall uptrends, that is, nice breakouts on the upside. But when things move up at a rate which is abnormal in the greater scheme of things, in other words, you don't really see markets moving that persistently and that strongly, as we've really seen since, particularly for these emerging markets, since the summer. Well, since you're from all over the globe, let's pin it down mid-August of last year. So what goes up so easily in markets usually comes down even more quickly. But as I've again said in the comment of the day, let's continue to make hay while the sun shines, but we just need to be alert. Okay, moving on to government bonds. I mentioned that upward dynamic on the treasuries. It was kind of interesting the way that formed. There was some economic data out today on Wall Street. Nothing unusual about that. But I wished that I had had an order, because I'm short in those U.S. Treasury bonds, and they'd been drifting down, as you know, over the last few weeks, and I should have had an order below the market to cover at least part of that position. Is what happened is that a few minutes before the employment figures came out, the bond market suddenly was very weak. And I looked at that and thought about it and thought, now should I take some of that out? And then next thing I knew, it had pretty well, it only lasted for a couple of minutes. And it's a slow reaction time, David. But then I was trying to figure out what was going on because the figures hadn't come out. And then when they came out, obviously a number of punters were expecting the employment figures to be bearish for bonds, in other words, declining unemployment, which they'd seen in previous months. So they sold beforehand, and lo and behold, unemployment rose, so they all came scrambling back in and covered, and this produced the big upward dynamic on the bonds. Well, that's put a floor under the market for the time being, and we're going to get a further rally, I suspect. I hope it's not too much, and I do maintain that these government bonds are in an extended phase of overall top formation development within a secular bear market, and the big problem is inflation. People say, where's the inflation? Well, if you say, where's the inflation, you're not paying the household bills. There's inflation all over the place. In terms of reports, though, people are not going to emphasize the inflation very often in financial reports. It's going to be the independents. It's not going to be the institutions. It's more the individuals, the independents, who are going to point that out. Governments certainly aren't going to talk it up because they want to keep the inflationary psychology at bay, and they will always be able to point to stiff competition and global manufacturing, particularly in ruthlessly competitive industries such as automobiles, keeping price increases at bay. But that's not going to last indefinitely. For one thing, look how the automobile producers are being squeezed by the rising metal prices. So my feeling is that central banks have sown the seeds for a next for the not the next, the current inflationary cycle that we're in. It doesn't start with a big bang. My analogy was it'd be more like Ravel's Bolero starts very quietly, but then the phenomenon keeps repeating and repeating and getting louder and louder every time. That's the big story, of course, behind gold as a secular bull market. But I was talking about bonds. That's the big story behind the secular bear market that's coming for government bonds. And it's typical that people will still be fearing deflation for the first few years of the new inflationary cycle, just as they were still fearing further inflation or hoping for further inflation, depending on their positions, during the first few years of the last disinflationary, deflationary cycle introduced by Paul Volcker back in the 1980s. Okay, in terms of currencies, we don't get the big generational long cycles, but we certainly get cycles that will last for a number of years. The one that everybody's aware of is, of course, the dollar's overall bearish cycle. I maintain that we're late in the cycle in terms of the overall price move downwards for the dollar, but that it isn't over. And I think we will see the dollar index push back down and go test that 80 level and eventually go through it and probably take out that all-time low, which is closer to 78. We may get a bit of overshoot on the downside, but I'm not in the dollar collapse school. Nobody wants the dollar to collapse. The US has been very happy to see the dollar devalue, and no doubt will be happy to see the dollar become even more competitive. But a number of other countries won't, and so you get some competitive devaluation policies along the way. And when I say that it's near the lows, or it's seen most of the bear market, so therefore much closer to the lows than the highs. In terms of the price move, the time cycle is likely to be slow. We'll get lots and lots of ranging. I wouldn't be surprised to see plenty of ranging. And a number of you have asked, what about Mark Fauber's comments saying that he thinks that we're going to get a further rally in the US dollar going above the February highs, in other words, before it goes back down and tests the lower levels, and that rally on the upside might really surprise people. I can't rule it out, but there's plenty of overhead resistance on the dollar index chart, and the most significant thing that I've seen in the last few days, well, it was today actually, that downward dynamic by the dollar. So unless that is countermanded immediately next week by an offsetting upward dynamic, and I don't expect that, but nothing is impossible in these markets. I think the dollar is more likely to go back down and retest 80 than take out its February high. In terms of currencies, in terms of value plays, a lot of people keep talking about the Asian currencies. I don't necessarily disagree with that hypothesis overall. In terms of opportunities right now, though, I'm a bit happier with the high yielders, and I've been playing and continue to play that in the Australian dollar and also the New Zealand dollar. I know I like the New Zealand dollar now a little bit more than the Australian dollar. It's got the somewhat better overall chart pattern, but as I say, I have both. Now, in terms of markets, well, getting this takes me on to the supply and elasticity markets, which also benefit from a softer dollar. I've already said that I maintain that all of these supply and elasticity markets, from oil through the industrial metals to the precious metals, are in secular bull markets. They're quite choppy, particularly the industrial metals. They are very, very choppy indeed, but we still have backwardations indicating shortages of refined metals. And I said the other day that I keep reading reports that bull run is over and that people should be selling all those positions. No doubt that contributes to some of the choppy activity that we see overall, but the backwardations indicate that this is consumer demand rather than speculative demand that is driving the ranging price rises that we're seeing overall. And as I said the other day, I've really seen the end of the bull run in metals forecast more times in the last few years than we've read about sightings of Elvis, and we read about sightings of Elvis most weeks. So, what else to mention here? Agricultural commodities. I've been describing those as dirt cheap for a couple of years, but most of them in base formation stages. One by one, we've seen them push up off the lows. And coffee was one of the first, also cocoa, sugar, and now the grain and bean complex has reached a very interesting stage of its overall cycle. And we saw the big rise occur in soybeans recently. Not a big rise relative to what it can do if the dry weather, which had been affecting, or people were fearing that it was going to adversely affect the crop in Brazil and Argentina, if that persists and there's some turbulent weather that causes investors, traders in these markets to worry when the U.S. crop cycle gets underway next month. We really could see some explosive moves on the upside, which will add to the inflation problems. But agricultural commodities are always a weather punt or some sort of disease-related punt. In other words, the big variable here is supply, and supply is not inelastic to the extent that it is with industrial commodities, because they can always plant more in the next crop cycle. But if that crop is damaged, yields can fall dramatically. And commodities, agricultural commodities, have been at historically depressed levels for the last year because we had bumper crops in the last season, both in South America, China, United States. But that's unlikely to be repeated this year, in my view. So, speculative, volatile, but I would not be at all surprised to see some spectacular upside moves. Unfortunately, I don't have soybeans at the moment. I've had some trades and that on the playing the upside in previous months, fortunately taking some profits, but not as big as I would have had I been in that position over the last few weeks, as I have been with corn. Corn's come up nicely as well, but it's the soybean crop that has grabbed all the headlines recently. And last but not least, I think I've touched on oil. People, I read today another forecast, somebody saying oil's going to go back to, or heard another forecast, somebody saying that oil's going to go back to $25 a barrel. I don't buy it. And again, the fundamental factor of just rising global demand from China, India, other developing countries, is going to be absolutely enormous. And really, I don't think that producers can make up the shortfall. And I think that we are going to see this bull run punctuated from time to time by medium-term corrections, and we saw one of those in the fourth quarter of last year. But then oil bottomed at the $40 level. It's back up near its highs now. I closed today 53.78, and I do expect that high, not only at 55, not only to be tested the way it was yesterday, but to be taken out before long. Natural gas, that's one of the cheapest of the fuels. I've got long positions there. I had to roll over a couple of positions at loss-making levels, as you may recall. But that's been moving very, very nicely quite recently. And when I look at a second month continuation chart showing the big picture, looking at a weekly chart, it looks awfully bullish to me. And I'm certainly going to hold on to that position in expectation of higher levels. I think that's it, pretty much it, folks. And this is starting to get to be a long audio, and I don't want to repeat myself. So I'll just wish you an absolutely marvelous weekend. All the best.